kind of the general sense of the organization is I think everyone's optimistic about our future. I think we've put ourselves in terrific position, but I think everyone's disappointed that in the way the season played out. I think we showed at times for long stretches that we're a really good team, but ultimately, like, it's pretty binary. We're not playing today. I'm having a press conference today. And I think that, you know, from Tom on down, I think there's a level of disappointment in that. And so, of course, there's frustration. I think there should be frustration when you fall short of a goal that you set a year ago.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That, of course, is the voice of Jed Hoyer, and he's talking about his frustration, that of Cubs owner Tom Ricketts, his frustration, the Ricketts family, maybe Crane, anybody that is there, feels a little bit of frustration after repeating the same year. Same as the first.
We'll see. How disappointed, how frustrated, how bad did it get for Tom Ricketts to watch? They are still sixth in the league in attendance. 2.9 million fans went to Wrigley Field this year. They averaged 35,922. Cub fans are Cub fans. They're going to show up. They keep showing up. And that has got to be, you know, they could be, you know, second or third, or maybe they're not going to surpass. That's about as good as it gets. The Cubs are in an attendance.
Did you see attendance,
sweet spot,
generally speaking, went up slightly?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Faster games.
Yeah.
More contact, more stolen bases. It's an exciting game. I think MLB, as we're seeing in the playoffs,
better booze?
Better drinks?
No.
You giving the beer bet that much credit?
No, I'm not. The beer bat helped. I know Brandon had one.
So the Cubs,
he had
from
one filled with that milkshake. You can't find
no, that was wrong
am
side
I,
of town.
Am I confusing?
Wrong side of town.
I'm sorry. I've seen so many photos of Brandon with all sorts Brandon gets of celebrities.
He, yes,
by the way,
he is definitely Mr. He is definitely rubbing shoulders with the Glitterati.
That's right,
as they say around here.
Did he throw out the first pitch with Mila Kunis?
I don't think he did. No, it was wrong game.
Okay,
wrong sport.
Never mind.
Cubs are sixth in attendance. Tom Ricketts has a payroll that is top 10 in baseball. From his perspective, he could justify saying, you know, hey, things aren't as bad as they seem.
Yeah.
They haven't been to the playoffs in a real long in a season, 162-game season since 2018. Things are as bad as they seem in a big market like this.
See, now you're onto something here that is very interesting to me. Things are going very well for the Cubs in terms of exactly what you're saying. The attendance is up. They have reduced some payroll, right? Are they paying the luxury tax? The minute they signed Bellinger, they knew that was going to happen, right? I just feel like with all the young players coming up, with some of the things going on, it is a very nice financial position to be in.
The business of baseball is booming at Wrigley Field.
Yes.
The winning is not.
Okay. Would you fire a guy because he's not winning, or would you stay with his plan that you're... See,
I'm not firing anybody.
Okay, but
I'm not firing anybody. Just to be clear.
I'm not suggesting that you're firing anyone, but I'm saying if you're Tom, aren't you pleased with what is happening? I get it. You would prefer to make the playoffs.
No.
But you've done pretty well
I'm
here.
I'm not pleased. I want an owner that's not pleased with this.
Okay. All right.
I want an owner that looks at 83 victories twice, 2 years in a row, and unless it gets me into the playoffs, I am displeased with the state of affairs, and I am having a very uneasy time accepting it, and I'm going to face a winter of discontent.
So is he, I love when you quote Shakespeare, is he not speaking and letting Jed talk because he's miffed, or is he not speaking and letting Jed talk because he doesn't want to appear as happy about the way things are going as maybe he is?
Fair questions. I think he's not speaking and letting Jed talk because he considers the speaking role tedious. I don't think he enjoys it or likes it.
Yes.
And even though we have complimented him for being accessible, he is not hard to find when he's at Wrigley Field, and he's not hard to find for fans, and he's happy to interact with them. I don't think he enjoys necessarily projecting the state of the Cubs every time that he's you know, asked to do so. Let's face it, it's a little bit harder to do when you're not making the playoffs. And they have not been now in a very long time. So maybe at one point we'll hear from him. It would be great to have him say, like some owners do, we're going to spend whatever it takes to get back to the postseason. We're going to do whatever is necessary. We are committed financially to making this into a winning operation again.
What if he were to say, we are building this the right way to get back into the playoffs. We are close to being to graduating more guys and to being in the playoffs. We are going to save more money moving forward
okay.
because we don't have to spend money on high salary
and players. We are proud of the fact that we are sixth in the league in attendance because our Cub fans are as loyal as they come.
They are.
And they are.
The fans are loyal,
and you
man.
Couldn't argue with anything that he
Not
said.
Not a word of
I'm
it.
I'm nitpicking, and I'm frustrated as a Cub fan looking at this offseason that we're going to prepare ourselves to be disappointed because as a fan base, I think you should brace yourselves to be disappointed. They're not getting Juan Soto. We can clamor all
okay.
we want.
Okay.
Juan Soto's a year younger than Michael Bush. He's worth every penny. He's not leaving New York.
He's
I don't see him.
He's a year younger than Michael Bush.
Yes.
Wow.
25, going to be 26 at the
Get
end of this month.
Get out of here.
Michael Bush is 26, going on 27.
That's absurd.
It is. It is. But he's not coming to Chicago.
Wow.
Now, who else do you want? Pete Alonso. I'm not sure about that either. Vlad Guerrero, maybe, if Jed gets creative. But I think that after hearing from Jed yesterday, I don't know that there's a sense of urgency that the fan base has every right to feel. And Jed's entering the final year of his contract, and I don't expect Tom Ricketts to say, you know what, Jed's entering the final year of his contract, and it's time to produce. Because he's under 500 since he took over for Theo, and he hasn't been to the playoffs in a 162-game season. It's time now.
What if they silently went about extending his contract?
I would think that'd be something that is not inconceivable.
Yeah. You know what's funny is you're kind of – you're catching yourself here. So you've just – you started out by going – I mean, I'm not trying to stun you, but I find this amusing.
I didn't expect that question. Can you tell?
Yeah. No, I'm just curious.
I would.
What if you took that?
I would understand it, but I would be disappointed. I mean,
because you want to get to the playoffs, and you think that they do too.
Because I know that a year from now, if we're sitting here on October 2nd, 2025,
yeah,
and we're talking about the Cubs missing the playoffs again. My professional opinion will be that it's time for a change mm-hmm. at the top, even though I respect everything
that
Jed
fair.
Has done. And yeah. I don't think there's an executive in town that I find more likable.
He's a great guy.
But I also think that professional sports being what they are and the Cubs positioned where they are, if a year from now we're talking about another playoff-less season, it's time for a new voice, a new set of eyes. There would be no other conclusion to reach, really, if you're going to behave like a big market team should.
If Jerry Reinsdorf were running the Cubs, wouldn't he tell you that it's just good enough to have everybody interested, to have everybody show up, and to not be in the playoffs because you ultimately save money?
Well, I wondered how long it was going to be before you brought it to that. And I'm not criticizing that because I think here's what it reminded me of yesterday. Yeah, things are going pretty well. You know, we're entertaining, we're competitive, we're good enough to be sixth in the league in attendance. The business of baseball is very good at Wrigley Field. That just said that. Okay, guys, let's shrug and move on. And I think that you're right. That's probably what Jerry Reinsdorf's reaction would be to this Cubs season. He would love to have the problems the Cubs have in terms of, you know, all that's missing is the winning, or the winning enough to get into the playoffs.
Right.
But I don't think that you can use that as a crutch or an impetus to say that you're satisfied. I don't think that the Cubs can afford to get complacent. And I heard a little too much complacency yesterday.
Yeah.
Only because I feel like they are confident in the prospects because they've had success with guys like PCA. And let's face it, Amaya finished strong. And Michael Bush, they traded for him, and he had a good year. And they did find Shota. We have to mention Shota. So they have some successful development stories that they feel like now the Matt Shaw, and you look at Owen Casey and Alcantara. Okay, but I think you want more proven commodities coming into Wrigley Field.
So we lost Pete Rose yesterday, a guy that is the hits king and has been around forever, and you know, he apparently had a heart problem that we didn't know about, and that's what ultimately caught up with him. Jerry Reinsdorf's 5 years older than Pete Rose. And I only mention that because I think when we talk about Tom, Tom's a young man. I'm sure Tom has aspirations of winning another World Series.
He's got to.
Yeah.
If he doesn't, that's a problem.
I don't know that Jerry does. And I don't know, and I'm not trying to be mean about it, but as you age, your mortality would become more obvious to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were all about making sure you won another one, then wouldn't you have to be in a totally different position, closer to where Tom is right now than the chairman?
Well, there's no question the Cubs are closer to winning World Series than the White Sox. All Jerry Reinsdorf can do at this stage is to position the team to one day try to say with a straight face that they're going to contend for a postseason spot. And right now, when you look at their division, they're not even close. They're not even close. So what is a realistic window of opportunity? Is that what you're asking? Because if it is, you know, they're 3 to 5 years away from being in contention for anything.
From even being, you know, in contention to win 100 games. I mean, but I'm saying the Cubs could be in the playoffs, could make noise next year.
We're sitting here harping on what's wrong with the Cubs, and I think that's part of the – everyone's got a role to play, right? Remember?
Yes.
But I think that when you talk about Chicago sports, the Cubs are closer to a championship than any other team in town right now.
Mm.
Because even though they're on the outside looking in, they are the closest to a championship because of what their resources make them feel like they can do to put them even closer in this offseason.
And it's good to remember that and to view what we're talking about through that lens.
You have to, because what you want to do is avoid the complacency that creates, because you are, you know, the biggest show in town, because you are drawing people to Wrigley Field at a rate that's acceptable if you're worried only about the business and the profit margin. But at some point you've got to put winning up there as well. And that's got to be the driving force behind every decision that you make. That's what you hear from owners that are obsessed with winning. There are examples out there. Is Tom Ricketts obsessed with winning? We'll find out this offseason.
312-644-6767 is the number. Psycho is in Westchester. Hey, Psycho.
Hey, guys. Hey, David. You just had talked about Ricketts shouldn't be happy with an 83 win team and 2 years in a row. So how does this Jed Hoyer still have this job with the Cubs? I mean, come on. This guy had a lack of bat during the offseason this year, and last year he had a lack of a relief pitcher last year that killed them making the playoffs. So how do you trust – I'm not trust this guy. How do you have any confidence in this guy running your team to make the playoffs next year? Like you said, he's content. That's all he is content. Like you said earlier, a Vladimir Guerrero, a Pete Alonso, you need a bat in that lineup. You're content. Listen, these kids are good players, all right. But you know what? You still got to beat Milwaukee. Milwaukee was 10 games ahead of you, and everybody else is getting better than you. Pittsburgh's got good pitching. I mean, you got to get better. I don't want to win the division. I want to win the whole thing. I'm not thinking about making a playoffs. I want to win the division. And if they win the division, I want to win the whole damn thing. I mean, that's what you got to be thinking. He doesn't think this way. And I'm sorry. This guy shouldn't be running the Cubs. That's the bottom line. I'll let you go and you guys talk.
Thanks, Psycho. Appreciate the phone call. I do think Jed Hoyer is a smart executive. I do think that he has the capability to make the right moves this offseason to put the Cubs in a position to be a World Series contender.
Yep.
Pressure's on, though. He's got to deliver. I understand where Psycho's coming from. The skepticism is appropriate. The pressure is appropriate. The seat can't be hot enough. And it's kind of fun. So when Jed called it an opportunity, I know what he was saying. He's a competitive guy. He probably relishes the opportunity to prove a lot of people wrong who think he can't do it, knowing he's got the resources to pull it off, and he believes he's probably got the baseball acumen to pull it off.
Let's try Keith. He's in Shorewood. Hey, Keith.
Morning, guys. Hey, David, and the previous caller, quite frankly, I can't believe I'm saying this, because your premise about if they go 83 again next year, and Judge should be, you know, on the hot seat. I would, in most cases, always agree with you, but I can point to these two things. Judge made a mistake with Kyle Hendricks, and counsel made a mistake with Kyle Hendricks. Kyle Hendricks was not and is not no longer the pitcher he was. The bullpen wasn't what they needed it to be early on, and they brought some people in that didn't perform. So that's on both of those guys for those reasons. But I don't know that this team – I know everybody keeps talking about slug in, you know, the modern-day baseball and all like that, and there's a lot of truth to it. But the fact of the matter is this. The Cubs, short of, you know, five or six Kyle Hendricks starts that should have never happened, that he was terrible in, and short of not having the bullpen, weren't that bad of a team. They were able to win games. And they had the right defense, you know, and, yeah, some guys underperformed. We had a problem with morale at third base. Horner underplayed this year. Swanson underplayed this year. Is that going to happen again next year? Then that's Judge's. If Judge makes a decision next year or into this year that, hey, these guys are not doing it, and he goes and tries to change something different, then I'm still with Judge. But if he doesn't, then that's a different story. I don't think we just go based on the fact that the Cubs had, you know, an 83 season and don't realize what the reasons were. Judge had the team on the field that he believed would win. He had the manager on the in the dugout he believed would lead them, and the players didn't perform, period. And quite frankly, so that's what my thoughts
Keith,
are.
That's a good call.
Thanks for the phone call. Yeah, I totally understand where he's coming from. I just feel like the pressure is something that Judge accepts, understands, and has got to feel. Heading into this offseason.
Yeah, and I do think that above all else, if the bullpen were fixed, if you could have the number of blown saves, all of a sudden, you know, you are beating the Milwaukee.
Does it affect
Brewers.
You that Judge Hoyer said yesterday that it was on him that he didn't address the closer situation better?
No, I thought it was on him. I appreciated him admitting that. But
isn't that part of the thing? So with due respect to what Keith has to say,
yes.
And the closer issue was a big problem, and maybe the other players weren't as big of a problem that exacerbated it.
Yes.
But you didn't address that from the top level. So that is
they should have.
That's something you hold him responsible for.
And you know, one way of addressing it, and we talked about it, is if you had made a move for the A's closer. If you had, and I'm not saying it would have been the easiest thing ever, but if you were willing to give up the prospects that would have taken and the money to get him in here, I think you had a different season and you would be in the playoffs.
And we'd be having a different conversation about Judge Hoyer this morning.
All right. We got Bruce next. Bruce Levine will join us. We're going to get to all your calls after we talk to Bruce. The number's 312-644-6767. Bruce Levine next. Mully and Hall on the Score.
Baseball. Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host, alongside our own David Haw.
We've got a lot of baseball conversation to cover.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce has the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Bruce Levine. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check them out, aturo.com. Bruce, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. Williams will throw for 300 yards. Back to you.
Love your football takes, Bruce.
Oh, that's Thank good you. Stuff.
Yeah, good stuff.
Any idea when that will happen?
Then I'll keep that to myself.
So it was interesting to listen to Judge yesterday, and I'm just curious. You know, he spoke by himself, and I know that that's not new, but I in a different world, maybe Tom would have been with him. In a different world, maybe he and Craig Counsell would have shared the microphone. Is Craig going to do his own kind of state of the Cubs after the season powwow?
No, I don't expect that until the winter meetings. I don't expect to hear from him at all. But you know what, Mike? It's a really good question because during the process yesterday, you know, I asked Hoyer about the relationship between him and counsel, and he was above and beyond complimentary about what counsel is going to bring to this team, not only in the first year where counsel was questioned. You know, a lot of people felt coming in that he was going to make the difference in six or seven games. They were going to get close to that 90-win mark after last season, coming in here and being the manager with the most money made ever in the history of baseball. But he talked about him being, you know, an influence in every avenue, every department in the baseball operation. So I think he looks at counsel as a conduit to his front office more than most front offices look at managers.
But Jed Hoyer did say that he feels great about where they are, and he explained why. This comes a couple weeks after we heard from Craig Counsell, who didn't sound like he felt great about where they were and why. And so, Bruce, I do continue to wonder, until we hear from Craig Counsell, maybe even after that, how much are the team president and the highest-paid manager in baseball on the same page?
Well, they're on the same page about winning, okay? As far as getting there, I think there was some discussions this year among them about where they need to go. Again, counsel has the hammer. He has 4 years left at $8 million a year. It's the strongest position of any manager in baseball. So that said, he's going to use that position to do one thing and one thing only that managers want to do. They want to win, okay? They're put in the dugout to win. And he, having won in situations before in Milwaukee where they were not supposed to win, has a pretty good idea about how to get there, all right? And with Hoyer, I think Hoyer has embraced this. The front office has embraced the idea that this is a serious guy to listen to. You know, remember, Counsell had 3 years in the front office with Milwaukee before he became a manager. This guy was known among his teammates as one of the sharpest players in the game while he was playing. So this is, a brilliant baseball guy. Now, baseball fans, Cub fans in particular, will say, well, why didn't they win more games? Why doesn't he show more energy on the bench? Why did the team look flat from time to time? And I think those answers are, you see that with every team that underperforms. To a certain extent, he felt his team underperformed. To a certain extent, I believe he thinks that the front office and the organization needs to spend their money more wisely as they move forward to try to win.
Do you believe that Cody Bellinger is going to opt out?
Boy, you can make arguments both ways, can't you? I mean, it's first of all, he's got $30 million real dollars coming next year after a so-so year for him. He didn't have a bad year. He had an injured year again where he only played 130 games. But, you know, you see the difference in the team when he's out there, okay? When he's in the lineup, when the other team has to prepare for him, it's a different approach that they have to take. Did he have the impact he had in 2023? No, he certainly did not. He didn't slug anywhere near where they thought he would. He didn't think he did either. But to answer your question directly, you know, can he get $100 million for 4 years on the open market as opposed to $50 million that he has left over the next 2 years in the marketplace? Now, Scott Boras will look at him and say, sit down with him and say, at 29, which he'll be still this year, you are probably going to be looked at differently by other teams, other front offices, then you will be at 30 next year when you have an option again to make $20 million. So I think guys, you can look at it either way, that, hey, $30 million is a lot. Go out there. You have an option for 26 as well. Go out there, have a great year, and get yourself a longer-term contract. But knowing last year that other than Ohtani and Yamamoto, nobody really got huge contracts in Major League Baseball, and the RSN situation going on in baseball, you know, maybe you're smarter to just take that $30 million and come back.
Very interesting answer there, Bruce. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Let me ask you about the White Sox. We heard from Terry Francona yesterday on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast, and he was expressing his respect for Jerry Reinsdorf because he used to work in the White Sox organization, as everybody knows, and maybe has forgotten. Do you consider, knowing both men as well as you do, do you consider Terry Francona a candidate for the Sox managerial job or a role in the Sox organization?
I think the latter. You know, I think bringing in somebody with Chris Getz as a consultant, somebody that, you know, look, Tony La Russa is a consultant for baseball operations, but he's more a on-field guy. We're talking about a Dayton Moore who did it with Kansas City, or somebody of that ilk, you know, a Kim Ng, who has such a great reputation in baseball and got a horrible situation put in front of her in Florida. Those are the type of people, you know, that can help a front office, not take away the power of Chris Getz, but add to it by their experience. I would love to see somebody like that come in. I remember when Kenny Williams was hired to be the general manager, the first move that Jerry Reinsdorf made was hiring Roland Heeman, who had such a great reputation and such a great baseball man, as a consultant with Kenny to get him through some of the rough parts of learning how to make trades, deal with other general managers, run a ball club. I would love to see that happen for Chris. I'd like to see Chris be a part of that, because he is the top man in baseball operations. I'd like to see him have a say-so. He has a working relationship from the past with, you know, with a few of these people. And I would say, you know, that him being involved would be a good idea. But I don't think you can have too many great baseball minds helping you when you're starting out something as challenging as rebuilding the Chicago White Sox.
How did they get here? What? How did they wind up with 41 wins in a season? I mean, something that happened overnight, right? I mean, it's almost like everything you tried was the wrong move.
Well, what you did was get rid of all your ballplayers from 2021 that won a division. Okay. A lot of those guys turned out to be poisons in the clubhouse, and they went in that purge last year at the trading deadline. And then you had a really bad product. And then this year, you didn't try to win, okay? That's always difficult. You're trying to get better, but you're not trying to win. So what does that mean? You're going to depend on a lot of young guys who haven't proven themselves to go out there, and you're going to bring in some peripheral free agents to try to get you by, maybe lose 90 to 100 games and show some progress in those areas with young guys. Well, I think it worked to a certain extent with pitching, but it certainly didn't work with position players, okay? You would have a hard time pointing to position players that you rely on and that you trust going into 2025 with the White Sox, other than the catcher. You know, I think Lee showed that he has potential to be a really good big league catcher. He's got leadership ability. I think he stood up. But other than that, I think, you know, their work has to be trading for and developing position players, because they went out there every day and averaged 3 runs a game. And you see the end result being 121 losses. You can't average 3 runs a game in Major League Baseball without getting your butt kicked.
Bruce, we got a minute left, but I wonder, because we're not going to hear from Craig Counsell for a while, as you said, and yet Jed Hoyer spoke yesterday, what does that mean about the future for pitching coach Tommy Hotovy, hitting coach Dustin Kelly? We know they made some moves on the staff, but those are the two biggest ones.
I think they're both back. I think they're both going to be in position, but I think keep your eye open for Counsell shifting coaches around, okay? So they're bringing back people, but are they all going to stay in the same role? That's That's what I'm going to be watching here over the next few weeks. He'll bring in three new coaches. Will one of them be a bench coach, a third base coach? Will the pitching coach have another job? Will the hitting coach have more help? These are things I like to see as Hoyer allows Council to bring in his own people and put them in the positions he feels are appropriate going forward.
Great stuff, Bruce. Appreciate your time as always, buddy.
Thanks, Bruce.
Now back to football.
Now back to football. Not quite yet.
No.
Not quite yet, Bruce.
See you guys.
All right.
One more little segment before we get to some football. We're going to take your phone calls, 312-644-6767.
You ask an interesting question about how the Sox got there. I know we're not going to dwell on the Sox, but I do want to follow up on that a little bit.
Okay, good. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
Well, if I were a fan, I'd be pissed. I'd be very angry.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
So that was Jerry Reinsdorf, obviously.
Yeah, I don't know when that was.
Couldn't
have been recent.
Kind of an evergreen type of comment. There you go. So Terry Francona was on with the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast yesterday and asked a couple questions, and he spoke about how much respect he maintains for the chairman who he worked for years ago in the Sox organization, and this is how he sounded yesterday.
Because I cut my teeth in the White Sox organization coming up through the minor leagues, I got to know a lot of those guys that are still there. And, you know, I know it's kind of easy and it's kind of fashionable for people to be critical of Jerry Reinsdorf, but you rarely hear people that work for Jerry be critical of him. Like, he is the most loyal, and probably to a fault.
To a fault.
Guy. I'll give you a quick story, and this is kind of Jerry, and this is probably I hold him in such high regard. I was the AA manager, and I was going to go to AAA, and I was down in winter ball managing, and Buddy Bell took the job with the Tigers, and all of a sudden, I'm going to be the third base coach. So I'm out throwing batting practice. And this is before cell phones and, you know, all that stuff. And I get a call and they say, hey, you have a important call. You got to come into the office and get it. So I run in off the field. So that took some time, you know, for somebody to come out and get me. And it was Jerry Reinsdorf. It wasn't his secretary. It was Jerry. And he just called to congratulate me on getting my job. So he was on hold for probably 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's him. He's just a nice man. And he wants to win so bad. And I feel for him. Again, I know, you know, people might be rolling their eyes because they don't, you know, I see the things that are written. But I'm telling you, man, he's just people that work for him. They feel the same way.
Were you rolling your eyes?
No.
Was I rolling my eyes? I think a lot of people heard that and they're like, well, we have heard this before. And
I think it's true.
It is true. The loyalty factor.
And you know some of these people.
Yes.
I'm being honest. I know people that are very loyal to Jerry.
Yes, absolutely. And I understand that and respect that.
I don't work for Jerry.
No. And you look at what's next and how that affects what's next. And the reason we're giving it any weight at all is because it's Terry Francona. And you wonder, as I asked Bruce, well, you know what? They need a manager. Is he the right guy for that job? I doubt it. I doubt he would want to take on that challenge. He's 65 years old. He's an accomplished major league manager. He's a championship manager. But can he help the White Sox in another capacity? So could he help answer the question that you asked? How did we get here? How did you get? Don't do that.
What did I do?
You're looking very disgusted. And
I did not.
It's like covering your face.
No. I'm sorry. I started getting this terrible headache.
Because I'm talking about the White Sox.
Right between my eyes.
Let me ask you this. Is it number one in your mind as a Sox fan and observer and analyst, essentially? Is it realistic to think that Terry Francona could make a difference? And is that something that would make you feel better about the direction of the White Sox if he were added to the organization?
How old do you say he is?
He's 65 years old.
Too young.
Because because Jerry Reinsdorf only hires people over 70?
Huh? I agree with what Tito is saying there, and I think Terry Francona is a great dude, and I've loved the opportunities I've had to talk to him, to talk baseball with him. He is a wonderful guy, a really good person, and we've been blessed to get a chance to talk to him a little bit. I wouldn't wish this rebuild, I would not wish what is currently going on with the White Sox on anybody. I mean, they haven't even finished kind of tearing down whatever it is they've got to tear down, whatever's left to get rid of.
I don't think it's a tear down. It's a bulldoze.
Yeah, that's fair. But I think that, you know, when you need to go at it with a backhoe, I don't know that you want to be a part of that if you're, you know, a baseball lifer.
Or think about it. About it. If you are a baseball lifer, maybe you want to go after that. Maybe you're desperate for a challenge. Not desperate. Maybe you are eager for a challenge. These guys are competitive. I don't know, Mully. I'm not saying necessarily Terry Francona, but I wonder, as hard as it seems to us because we're tired of watching the losing.
Yeah, it's very difficult.
Does anybody look at that as an opportunity to their stamp on a franchise?
You had a thought when I said how did they get here? Because this is as thorough a losing season as you'll ever see in your life.
Yeah.
And I mean, how did you get to a place where, I mean, even like Grady Sizemore, he won 13 games, 12 games, whatever he won, just times that by three, and you're close.
You let too many things slip. You let a championship standard, or you let the highest standard that you set for your organization slip by making a terrible personnel decision.
How do you not win 60 games? I'm not being mean. I don't know how you lose this many games.
I don't know how you're wrong about so many players that were key components to a winning culture, a winning season. I don't know how you preside over, and you can name them on Jose Abreu, Tim Anderson, Yoan Moncada, Luis Robert Jr., Eloy Jimenez, right there. There's five guys who in 2021 were part of a winning culture, a winning team. All five of them have not, after that moment, been the player that they were that season.
How are you that wrong about everything? And look at the guys that they used this year. How were you that wrong? How could you possibly? And let me ask you a question. How do you make a trade where you bring in three players, only one of whom is on the major league team, Miguel Vargas, and he's not answered anything?
Giant leap from there to there, because I think what happened with those to let the complacency kind of creep in was the beginning of the process. And I guess it culminated with what you're describing on trade deadline day, when you settled for a lot of things that you shouldn't have to been in a position to settle for. But I think you were dealing from a desperate spot, and that's not a good position to be in. It's tough. And that's why you're shaking your head and covering your eyes. Because you don't want to look. You want to look away.
If I am doing that, I am not
Twitch is doing having it. The Twitch audience is okay. Having a ball right now.
I'm not doing it on purpose, or I'm not trying to annoy you. I
don't mean you're trying to annoy me. You look in distress, and I think when you think about the White Sox future, it's understandable.
Wow.
It's understandable.
I mean, I can't think of anyone I would want back off that team.
Last year's team? I want Garrett Crochet back.
Yeah, well, he's not going to be back.
I want the catcher back. I can live with the catcher.
Edgar Cuero?
He's him too. You need to. Right? You need to. But you're probably right there. Other than that, I really can't think of anybody that you would feel like you're going to miss if they're gone.
I mean, what would you do if there's no Andrew Vaughn?
I don't think you would miss him too much.
What do you do if Gavin Sheets isn't part of the future?
You wish him well elsewhere.
I'm being honest.
Jonathan Cannon, Garrett Crochet, I'll take those guys back any day.
Okay.
That's about it.
But I'm being honest. Give me, what if you got rid of Andrew Benintendi? How are you going to then win your 41 game?
I don't think you're in danger of missing too much. I mean, he had the great walk-off moment.
He had a great close to the season. He didn't have a good year.
Did not have a good year. who had a good year. Garrett Crochet had a breakthrough year, but he was on a terrible team, historically bad team. So what does it mean? It means that he is good enough to be traded, and the prospects you're going to use in return will be the foundation of some, whatever you're building. But I don't think you, I don't like that either, but that's a longer conversation.
Okay, we've got to get to Stacy Dales, and we've got to...
Well, Bruce said talk football, so let's go back to football.
Yes, we will. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.